Afternoon, everybody. Firstly, welcome and thank you. It's a fantastic turnout, so thank you so much for coming. This is the second DNSSEC for beginners session. We did the first one at Cartagena, and we did it so badly that they said we needed more practice, so we're back for a second try. Hopefully, we're going to spend the next hour rattling through some of the real basics behind DNSSEC. Don't worry, you don't need any kind of technical knowledge to take part in this. Hopefully we can demystify some of the stuff around DNSSEC where people say it's too complicated or it's too difficult. It certainly isn't. And hopefully by the time you leave after the next 60 minutes, you'll have a bit of a better feel for what DNSSEC is and how it affects you. We're blessed to have some absolutely fantastic speakers with us today. If you look around you, I think you'll see, hopefully on your laps or on your seats, that there's a little program guide that says who's speaking. But we have with us Norm Ritchie, and we have Matt Larson, we have Roy Ahrens, and we have Russ Mundy as well talking. So it's fantastic, and a few folk taking part in a little play later on. So the schedule looks a bit like this. We're going to try and finish in 60 minutes. It's a really informal session, so if you want to ask questions, you want to stop us at any point, please do. We're going to try and fly through to get you out on time, but please do feel free to stop us. We'll also be around at the end of the session if you want to come and ask questions. We'll stay back, so if you've got a real burning question and you don't want to ask it in a public forum, then please just come and grab us. So, to begin, I want to start and tell you a little bit how DNSSEC was invented. Now, a lot of people probably think that DNSSEC was invented somewhere around the last sort of 10 years ago, somewhere in the bowels of the ITF, but that's actually not true. DNSSEC was actually invented, give or take, 5,000 years ago, back in the Stone Age. I want to introduce you to Ugwina. She's a cave woman, and she lives right on the edge of the Grand Canyon. She's gorgeous. The slide advances. And this is her boyfriend. This is Og. And he's rather badly placed because, unfortunately, he lives on the other side of the Grand Canyon. It's a long, long way down, and it's a long way round. So Ugwina and Og don't really get together very much, which isn't great for them. So one of their very, very rare visits, they sit around the fire, and they're chatting and saying, hey, you know, how can we talk more? And they notice the smoke coming out of Og's fire. And so when they go back, before they know it, they're sending each other smoke signals, and it's working really well for them. But then unfortunately, one day, a new caveman moves next door to Og, a caveman called Kaminsky, and he's a bit of a mischievous guy, and he kind of likes Ugwina too, so he thinks, I'll start sending her some smoke signals, and away he goes. And now the poor girl's really confused. She doesn't know who to believe, and she can't really tell who's sending her what message. So she sets off, slings a rope down, and heads off down the cliff to try and sort it all out. And when she gets to the village, she gets together with Og, and she talks to the wise village elders. And there's an elder called Caveman Diffy who's sitting there, and he thinks he might have a plan for them. And so he scoots off, and he rushes straight into Og's cave. And what's he up to? What's he up to? And right at the back, he finds this pile of strangely coloured blue sand. And what's unique is that sand can only be found in Og's cave. Can't be found anywhere else. And he grabs a handful, and he runs out, and he throws it onto the fire. And the smoke turns this incredible blue colour. And now Ugwina and Og can chat away happily again. And poor old Kaminsky, he's getting nowhere now. Because she's busy reading the blue smoke and ignoring the grey smoke. And really, if you take one message away from today about DNSSEC, that's what DNSSEC is. DNSSEC turns the grey smoke of DNS into blue smoke so that you know when you're receiving DNS traffic that it's come from the person that you thought it was coming from and it hasn't been interfered with. So it's a really, really simple message. And when you get lost in some of the technical stuff talked around DNSSEC, it's very easy to get confused. But if you think back to this and think back to that blue smoke, and you won't go wrong. So that's the start of DNSSEC.
All right. Hello, everyone. So I got to follow that. I'm going to talk about DNS and DNSSEC basics. So this will be really fast. I want to start with just a little bit of DNS basics. So please bear with me if this is old hat to you. But we've got to get some terms down DNS-wise before we can talk DNSSEC-wise. So this is the DNS namespace that we're all familiar with. You see some familiar-looking labels on there, and you know, we all know about domain names, how you can construct a domain name. You start at a particular one of these nodes in the namespace, and you work your way up, and then you can have pieces of data associated with these domain names. You know, like IP addresses is what we're all familiar with, turning a domain name into an IP address. But then there's also things that make DNS itself work, like name server records and other things. A domain is a pretty simple, straightforward definition. A domain is when you just take a node in that namespace and anything below it. And I talk about domains to contrast them with zones. And zones, the concept that we really have to understand to talk about DNSSEC. And a zone is just a region of administration in the namespace. A zone is a particular unit that can be administered and maintained all by itself without affecting anything else. And if we look, and I draw some zone boundaries on here, you can't look at the namespace tree and know what the zone boundaries are. You have to actually know. So I can tell you we know that there's a root zone at the top of the main namespace. That's maintained independently from there's zones for each top level domain. And as we go on down, for example, below .com, we have nearly 100 million zones. Well, actually, just over 90 million. You know, what's 10 million between friends? I have just, for example, three zones below .com, and this can keep going further on down. You see that below HP.com, there we have still two more zones. And so what happens is zones above delegate to zones below, so that the root zone, it delegates responsibility for those TLD zones to the TLD zones, and they in turn delegate to the second-level zones in the case of .com, and if we look at HP.com, it delegates further on down. So the parent zone delegates to the child zone. So then let's talk about name servers. The purpose of a name server, the main purpose, is to know about information in these zones and answer questions when somebody asks. So each zone has a set of authoritative name servers, we call them. So the root zone, for example, has name servers with 13 different IP addresses. And the .com zone has name servers with 13 different IP addresses. And for purposes of, I'm getting a signal. What's the signal? Mic closer. Okay. And then the CNN.com zone, we're going to say for purposes of example, has four name servers. So how do you look something up? Let's say that we have somebody, an internet user on the far right, they want to look up www.cnn.com because they want to get to the cnn.com website to look that up. So the first thing they do is they send that query to their recursive name server, which is run by either their ISP or in a large enterprise network, by their IT department. And so the recursive name server does all the heavy lifting here. It starts in the absence of any other information. It goes to the root and asks the root, and the root comes back and says, well, I can't help you for www.cnn.com, but I can get you to .com, and it sends back the list of those .com authoritative servers. And then the recursive name server follows that referral, and it asks the .com servers. It says, what do you know about www.cnn.com? And the .com servers, they say, well, I can at least tell you about the cnn.com name servers. And then finally, the recursive name server can go to the cnn.com name servers. It's asking the same question this whole time. And then finally, it gets the answer for www.cnn.com, and it sends that back to the user who asked, and the user can open up the connection to the web page and get the web page. So that's DNS about as fast as I can possibly do it. Let's move on to DNSSEC and DNS security and why we need it in the first place. And so we need DNSSEC because DNS, vanilla DNSSEC as designed, really doesn't have much security. It just wasn't built into the protocol early on. Most DNS transactions, it's a query is a single packet and a response is a single packet. So it's very easy, as we're going to see demonstrated, for a bad guy to get in there and get a bad response in there instead of the legitimate response. And if there's no security on here, how do you know that the response that you're getting is the good response or the bad response? And the answer is you don't know. You really, but all you have to go on, well, most of what you have to go on is the source IP address of the response, but anybody can fake a source IP address, so that's not much to go on. So it's really easy to spoof these responses. Now, fortunately, over the years, we've figured out how to make resolvers, the things doing the lookups, we figured out how to make them sufficiently paranoid that they can be clever and get rid of the simple attacks, but there are still complicated attacks that that can get past even the most clever resolver. So we need something better, and the something better is DNSSEC. And DNSSEC uses public key cryptography and digital signatures, and we get two things with DNSSEC. You get what's called data origin authentication, which is just a fancy way to say that you know where the data came from. And in a DNS context, what that means is, for example, you know that a piece of data came from, say, the .com zone or from the CNN.com zone, or you know which zone it came from. And you also get, the second thing you get is data integrity. And data integrity, just as it sounds, means that you know that the data is legitimate. You know that it hasn't been changed since it was signed. So the bottom line is that DNSSEC offers protection against spoofing, because once pieces of DNS data floating around have digital signatures associated with them, you can verify the signature and know if you're looking at a piece of legitimate data or not. It's important to point out what DNSSEC doesn't do. It doesn't provide any confidentiality. It only provides authentication. So there's no confidentiality. That means there's no encryption here. The idea is that DNS data is public. And it also can't address any attacks against the name server itself. So this isn't a defense against poorly written name server code. It's not a defense against denial of service attacks. It offers a very specific set of services, those two things that I just mentioned, data origin authentication and data integrity. So in DNSSEC, we're using public key cryptography, which means that we have a key is really what's called a key pair. And the public key is what you use to validate digital signatures made by that key. And because it's a public key, it's made public, and it's published actually in the DNS in something called a DNS key record. This is one of the first of several new types of data for DNSSEC. And then the zone's private key, which is actually used to sign the data, that you keep safe. DNSSEC would allow you to keep it completely offline if you wanted. You could literally keep it on a laptop in a safe and only pull it out when you wanted to sign your DNS data. DNSSEC separates the act of signing from the act of serving the data, so you don't need that key, for example, on your authoritative servers. You could even keep the key in something called an HSM, a hardware security module, which is basically a black box that holds the key and does signing, and you can never get the key out, so it can't be stolen. So the zone's private key signs the different pieces of data in the zone, and those digital signatures resulting from that signing, they go in yet another new type of record called an RRSIG record, for a resource record signature. So the digital signatures go in this new record. Everything in the zone gets a digital signature. Now, there are no certificates in DNSSEC, to kind of draw an analogy with the other kind of public key cryptography and digital signatures that people are familiar with. I say here that the trust model is rigid, and we have what we call a chain of trust. And unlike in the certificate world, where you can have different certificate authorities vouching for the authenticity of a particular public key, in the DNSSEC world, it doesn't work that way. Only your parent zone in the DNS namespace, in the tree that I showed, only your parent zone can vouch for your key. So, for example, if your CNN.com, only.com, can vouch for your public key, and if your .com, only the root can vouch for your public key. Now, there's actually two types of public keys, and I mention this just because these are terms that you're going to hear. So in reality, it's not quite as simple as I described. There's what we call key signing keys and zone signing keys, but the important point here is that these two keys cooperate to make the digital signatures in the zone and allow this to all work out. So the final type of record that I'm going to talk about is the delegation signer record, and this is important in this chain of trust. This is how a parent vouches for the keys of its children. The child sends its key up to the parent, and key itself doesn't go in the parent. A representation of the key in the form of a DS record goes in the parent, and then the parent signs that. So they're not signing the parent doesn't sign the actual key. It signs a stand-in, a representation for the key. So it's not enough to just say, oh, here's my zone, here's my key, I'm signing everything, and you know, you can trust me. Well, how can you trust a particular key? And the answer is you have to trust somebody. You have to start somewhere. And the way DNSSEC works is you have one or more trust anchors, and those are keys that you absolutely trust. And then when you see a piece of data signed by another key, you try to get from your trust anchor to the key that made that signature so that you can trust it. And this is analogous to the list of certificate authorities that your web browser has in them. You maybe have never seen the list, but deep inside your web browser is a list of dozens of certificate authorities that your web browser will accept a certificate from. And if you've ever seen the pop-up that says, you know, somebody might have given your browser a certificate that it doesn't recognize, and it says, well, here's this certificate, but it's from this no-name certificate authority that I've never heard of, so I don't know if I should trust it. And you know, that this is the point where everybody clicks, yeah, just go ahead and trust it. All right, so if there were ever anything that needed a picture to describe it and explain it, I think what I just said is probably a case for that. So here we have a representation of the DNS namespace again. We have the root zone at the top, the .com zone, and then the CNN.com zone. And note that we've got that IP address for www.cnn.com. So let's look at this from the perspective of www.cnn.com's IP address. And what we want from DNSSEC is we want somebody to be able to get that legitimate IP address for www.cnn.com, and we want them to know, to be able to verify that they've got the legitimate IP address. Well, so how do we do that? Well, so there is there's a key pair for the CNN.com zone. And remember, I'm representing it as a single key icon, but remember, a public key has two parts. There's a public key, which is what we make public, and there's the private key that actually does the signing. But I don't want this diagram to get too busy, so I'm just showing a single key. Most of the time, the single key means the public key, but just bear in mind that the signature was actually made with the private key. All right, so here we go. So we have this public key for CNN.com, and that digitally signs the IP address for www.cnn.com. So you can see we've got a little signature now above the address for www.cnn.com. So that's great. The name server for the CNN.com zone could hand out the IP address for www.cnn.com, and it could hand out the digital signature for it. But if somebody receives it, how would they know that they should trust that signature made by that key? Well, what happens is CNN.com takes that key and they send it to their parent, which in this case is the .com zone. But remember, it's not the actual key. It's this thing called a DS record, which is a representation of the key. So that DS record goes to the parent. Now the .com zone, it has a key too. And what it does is it signs that DS record. So now the DS record has a signature over it. But how do you know you should trust the .com zone's key? Well, actually, the .com zone, this is what's going to happen on March 31st, we're going to send that .com zone public key to the root zone, where it will get represented as a DS record. The root zone's already signed. It has a key. So the root zone's key signs the DS record for .com. So we're walking backwards up what we call the chain of trust. And now that root zone key is what we call a trust anchor, and that's published everywhere. Now, all of these keys could be trust anchors. I'm giving you the simplest example here where you trust the root zone's key. So this is the key that you tell your name server, actually something called a DNSSEC validator. Anything can do this DNSSEC validation process. You tell your DNSSEC validator, all right, this is the root zone's key. This is a trust anchor. You know, this you trust. And use this key to build a chain of trust from it to whoever is giving you some information. So now you can see that if somebody wanted to verify the digital signature over the IP address for www.cnn.com, and all they had was the root zone's key as a trust anchor, well, how would they do it? Well, this is what it would actually look like. Remember, I said there's actually there's two keys in here. There's the key signing key, and then there's the zone signing key, and then there's the DS record. But the point is, you can start at the top with the trust anchor, and the root zone's key signs the .com zone's DS record, and then that stands in for the .com zones key, and the .com zones key signs the CNN.com zones DS record, which stands in for the CNN.com zones key, and then the CNN.com zones key actually signs the piece of data that you're interested in. So I know this is a busy slide and a lot of information delivered very quickly, but hopefully you can kind of get the idea that if you starting from a particular trust anchor, like in this case the root zones key, and having another piece of data signed by a key several layers down, several zones down, you can see how you could form this chain of trust and start and say, all right, if I trust this key, I can build this chain of trust and ultimately trust this piece of data that comes back. And that, in a nutshell, is DNSSEC. In a DNSSEC world, recursive name servers that do all the lookups, they have DNSSEC validation enabled. They have one or more trust anchors configured. And authoritative servers that give back data, they give back not only data, but the digital signatures over that data. And when the recursive name servers see the data, the signed data, they use the trust anchors that they have to try to form these chains of trusts and know, is the data good? Or is it bad because it can't verify the signature? So with that, I think we can move on to the next thing.
Still on?
Hi. We're going to do something different now. So one of the things that people don't know is that a lot of technical people also have a very artistic side to them as well, maybe music, film, whatever. We're going to do a play. So all the stuff that Matt just talked about, we're going to act out. These guys and Jay Daly will help us. You'll figure out who he is later on. You'll have to introduce him. And basically... These guys are going to act as DNS servers. And with no expense, we spent almost $5 in props. So we sell one ticket for this. We're good. And we're going to use papers. In the DNS layer, there's two types of services. Those that publish data and those that look up data. And so we'll use paper for the queries and little... snippet those for the responses. Okay, now the title of the play, there's four acts to this, and I'll introduce each act. So the title of this play is Joe Does His Online Banking. Now, I don't want to use your name tag, I'm Joe User. I'll introduce everybody here. This is Joe User. And this is, Roy is my ISP. We have Mr. Big Bank, that I'm going to do banking. We have .com, of course, and then we have the root. Okay, so without further ado, here we go. Okay, Joe User, trying to pay my bills. I do it online, because I'm a geek. Okay, I'm at a terminal here that is very transparent. Tap, 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 tap. I'm going to www.bigbank.com. Enter.
www.bigbank.com is not on my list. I need to go to the root. Root. What is the address for www.bigbank.com?
Hey, Mr. ISP. I don't know, but I do know how to get you to .com. You need to go to 1.1.1.1.
I'll go to .com. Hi, .com. I want the address for www.bigbank.com.
Well, I don't know the address, but I can give you the address for bigbank.com, and they're at 2.2.2.2.
I will go to 2.2.2.2. Hello, bigbank.com.
Hello.
I would like to have the address for www.bigbank.com.
www.bigbank.com.
Oh yes, I know that. It's 1.2.3.4. Perfect. That's the answer that I need to have. your mission, you need to go to one, go through the 3.4. That's www.bigbang.com.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Okay. So, here they go. Off to go to the website, www.bigbang.com. Lo and behold, I have $5 on my account because I just, or $5 left for this, spend $5 of it, and I can't pay myself. Lucky me. I'm going to make a deposit, though. I'm depositing $10,000 in the bank. So, that, what we just went through, is a typical DNS transaction. Now, all the technical stuff you hear, that's really how it works. So, we're going to do it again. Act 2. There's no intermission. Act 2. Joe gets scammed. Enter Dr. Evil. So, we're going to redo this. It's fine. And this time, I now have $10,000 in my bank account, by the way. The work that I can. Okay. Okay, I'm going to do my banking again. I'm going to repeat actually the exact same thing, but this time I'm going to do what's called a van in the middle attack, also known as cash poisoning. And this is how people get scammed when sites are totally hijacked. This is without DNS again. Okay. Doing my banking, www.bigbank.com.
I don't have the address for www.bigbank.com. I know our root is, and I will go to the root first. Hello, root. I need the address for www.bigbank.com. At this point, Dr. Evil has been sending the ISP regular messages pretending to say, I know where it www.bigbank.com is. It's at 6.6.6.6. This has the wrong identifier, so I just don't trust this. www.bigbank.com.
Hey, Mr. Aspie, I'm senior in one. Norm hasn't been paid for a long time. I don't know where bigbang.com is, but I do know where .com is. You can find him at 1.1.1.1.
That has a correct old-fashioned identifier, so I will go to 1.1.1.1.com. Hello.com. I would like to have the address for www.bigbang.com. The answer is www.bigbang.com is at 6.6.6.6. Again, not the correct identifier. So I just want to not trust this one.
Well, I don't know the IP address for www.bigbang.com, but I can tell you that bigbang.com's name server is at 2.2.2.2.
Perfect, the correct old-fashioned identifier. That all fits. I will go to bigbang.com. Bigbang.com. www.bigbang.com. I need the address.
Once again, Dr. Evil slips in. Here is the answer you after. 6.6.6.6.
The answer to www.bigbang.com is 6.6.6.6. And hey, it's my birthday attack. It's a correct identifier. And I now have the address for www.bigbang.com. Joe Usher.
Here. Oh, thank you very much. So, click, here I go. I'm off to what I think is bigbang.com and enter user ID, enter password, click, cool, thank you very much. Boom. Zero again. No bank balance.
Meanwhile,
yes, as the Dr. Evil snuck in the middle, I still got the question, and I'm still going to give the answer. It is 1.2.3.4, but it doesn't matter since the wrong answer's already arrived.
I didn't ask for www.bigbang.com. I asked for it a minute ago, and I got that answer. So this answer, I don't know what to do with it. I'm going to throw it away.
Okay, so that completes the man in the middle of the pack, so everybody can run in now and make yourself your fortunes. That does happen in real life. And it does just happen at the grand scale sometimes as well. As I said before, the DNS is not secure. So, what a lot of very smart people did actually quite a while ago is get together the idea and develop a standard called DNSSEC. So, it was actually people like these guys. They were actually some of the ones that wrote the specifications for DNSSEC. And it would be possible if we use digital signatures to actually keep all the signatures in one spot. Of course, that doesn't scale very well. So they have the chain of trust that was created that Matt was describing before. So we'll actually be a quick thing to do a key exchange.
Hey.com.
I'm .com, Zonstein. I'd like to give you my key so you can turn it into a DS record, publish it, and sign it, please. So here it is.
Thank you very much.
Hello, .com. I'm BigBang.com. I would like to give you my DS record for you to sign and put in your zone.
Okay. Sorry. Keep doing that. Sorry about that. So, all that complicated stuff you saw right now, it's actually that simple. So now that everybody signed, we'll redo. This is called DNSSEC, saves the day, it's a biohack. And we'll redo the man in the middle attack as well. So now what we're doing, same thing. We're going to do the queries, service will respond, we're all signed now, plus we have the man in the middle attack, so everything at once. Okay, back to doing my banking again. Hopefully it's a better day. Click, 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 click. www.bigbank.com.
There is nothing like cash, so I need to look it up. I will go to the root service first. Meanwhile, I have a copy of the root service keys right here. This is my copy of the root service key. This is my trust number. Root, I need the address for www.bigbank.com.
Dr. Evil here again. So while this is going on, I will be sending my fake responses. www.bigbank.com is at 6.6.6.6.
Thank you, Bruce, for the answer. It has no signature. Even if it had a signature, it's false. I can't check that against my beautiful pink key. So I'll just ignore it.
Hey, Mr. Aspie, how are you doing? So you want me to go to www.bigbank.com? I'm afraid I don't have the answer to that, but I can tell you where .com is. .com is at 1.1.1.1.
Let's check that. I got a response from the root. The root has signed its response. I can check that against my beautiful pink key, and it validates. Hello.com at 1.1.1.1. I need the answer for www.bigbank.com. Thank you. That was quick. The answer to bigbank.com is 6666. But again, no signature. Just going to ignore that.
Well, I don't know where www.bigbank.com is, but I can tell you that bigbank.com's name server is at 2.2.2.2.
Let's check it. Yep, fits beautifully with my pink key, with the key I actually got from the root zone for .com. Thank you. So, bigbank.com, where can I find the address for www.bigbank.com? Ah, perfect. That was quick again. Thank you. Oh, false signature, doesn't validate, doesn't verify. I'm just going to go ignore that.
I'm very happy to provide you with the signed answer for www.bigbank.com.
Thank you. And again, I can match all of these signatures up. I can match all of those keys up. and it validates against my beautiful pink key. This is the answer to www.bigbang.com. Validate, verify, sign, seal, and deliver it to Joe.
Oh, thank you very much. I know it's validated. I feel so much safer now. Hit enter. And now I know I'm going to my real site. So, that was it. That was the whole process of the find. Thank you, everybody.
Well, now, transition from www.bigbank.com to Russ Mundy and trying to give folks some examples of how, in a straightforward way, you can implement and go do DNSSEC yourself. And at the end of this, I am going to try to engage folks from the audience, asking people to think about the things that they've seen so far today and how they might go about doing DNSSEC. Now, one of the important aspects of DNSSEC and DNS is that, in fact, there's a lot of pieces. So we've seen today that though it can be explained in a simple way, there are quite a few individual elements that have to work together to actually make it all flow smoothly. And normally, DNS parts are, well, each activity that's doing something with DNS has one part or another that they're particularly concerned with. Matt used the example, and you'll see it in the slides a little bit, and I'll have it here in pictures also, where there's a lot of name servers, and if you're a name server operator for a big operation, you're really concerned about the operation and proper functionality of those name servers. But you also are probably somewhere in your organization also operating recursive name servers. Someone is using, lots of people are using DNS in applications, so you make use of it in multiple ways, but you normally have one especially important and critical aspect of it that you deal with. Now, when activities are really big and large and have a big focus on DNS, then they tend to have organizations that have a lot of DNS expertise. And they are also more likely to be the ones that want to do the DNS security things themselves. If an organization has a very different function, for instance, just to pick something, a hospital or a bank, their emphasis is going to be different. They may have in-house expertise. They may have hired all of their expertise done by outside operations. So, for instance, a lot of people here are involved in registry and registrar operations, but they also do other parts of DNS. And so the main focus that I'd like to have people think about here is, what's your biggest part of DNS that you do that's the most important thing to your functionality, your business, or your function, your activity, whether it's an individual running a consulting firm that is mostly going to be a user, whether it's a large TLD operator and it's operating authoritative name servers, whether it's a registrar. Many registrars also provide name service, and that name service is mostly authoritative, but sometimes also large recursive name server operations. So try to be thinking about your DNS function as we talk about what you need to do for your activities in DNSSEC. And the picture that I wanted to refer back to from Matt's presentation was that of zones, because each activity there's one administrative activity that's responsible for each of these particular zones. And those zones, in this case, the emphasis in the two far right zones there, the HP.com and the CNN.com zone. Those are not have they don't have a primary business interest of running name service stuff. They have other primary business interests. CNN is running a news system. HP is a computer hardware software vendor. Where VeriSign names and name service is a crucial part of their business. Same thing for the root operation. So as a general principle, the thing I think is important to remember is if you're part of an activity that's deeply and heavily dependent upon some DNS functionality for the life and survival functionality, your core activity tied to DNS, there's a good chance you're going to want to do DNSSEC things yourself, just as you probably are doing most of your DNS operations yourself. If you're an activity that has very little to do with DNS, performing DNS functions as part of your core activity, then you're probably going to want to think about outsourcing your DNSSEC like you may well do for your DNS today. So the whole picture of DNS on a buy zone basis involves a lot of players. And this is another way to represent a zone where the previous picture that Matt used and I had just a moment ago shows it in a namespace kind of way. This is an attempt to show it in how many different activities are actually involved from when a name gets put into DNS until a name is actually used by somewhere. So content, the actual information in DNS, is what I'm calling content of a DNS zone, is put in on the far left. It gets used on the far right. And so there are registrants, registrars, registries, name server operators, applications users. There's a whole lot of activities involved in the middle. Here's another illustration of how you could represent this, and you could think of the client there in the lower right-hand side of the screen as being someone who is asking for the proverbial www.cnn.com that we've used. And he has a recursive name server he sends a request to, goes to the authoritative name server, and previously the zone administrator has to have put information into the authoritative name server. And so this is another way to represent what Matt showed in his diagram here. Now, what I'm about to show on the screen, this actually is a picture of CNN's homepage about 3 to 4 years ago. And people tend to think of one homepage and one DNS lookup. Well, guess what? This represents how many DNS lookups there were on that page at that time. And that was around 65 to 75. Now, we did one of these runs recently, and guess what? It's bigger. Okay, so the point I'm making here is that DNS happens lots and lots and lots of times in the background, and people have no idea what's going on back there. Pages are getting more complex. There's lots more DNS queries, and all of those do need to get signed and validated, because it is truly the DNS content that matters, because that's why DNSSEC exists, is so users can make sure that they got the right content and it came from the place that they expected it to come from. And so attacks like we just saw illustrated here are the kinds of attacks that exactly DNSSEC is attempting to prevent, so that the user can easily determine in a really automated way that you're not being spoofed. And so where DNSSEC, the mechanics of it work, is on the right-hand side, and these are where all the IETF specifications are. But on the left-hand side of the triangle, you also have to have DNSSEC-related activities for moving the material around. So pretty much every place you need to achieve what this picture shows in the simplest form of having a signed source of data and a validating recursive resolver. You've got to get data in the right places. And once it's all in the right places, it can work completely automatically and give you the validated answer you need. And so, as I've said before, if you're doing a lot of your DNS activity today, you'll probably want to do a lot of your own DNSSEC activity, whether it's adding additional steps to your existing process, using open source tools, getting your vendors to provide you with DNSSEC capability. And there's sometimes a mix that an operation has to put in. There's lots and lots of options to do this. We conduct a survey periodically of DNSSEC capabilities. We've got well over 100 things in there that are available of various sizes and shapes for actually doing DNSSEC. So when you're doing something in terms of outsourcing things, there are also a combination of things you can do. If you're using products and running some small amount inside, some small amount outsourced, then you need to look to those product vendors to provide those implementation choices. If you're the holder of names and you're using your registrar for providing your name service, then you need to ask your registrar when they're going to offer DNSSEC as part of the name service offering they're providing. Now, before we actually get to that part, I'd like to hold up my favorite DNSSEC validator. This is my Nokia N900 cell phone, and it does DNSSEC. So it's not so hard, it's not so complex that it can't be done on a cell phone. So what I'd like to do now is ask for folks in the room that have been thinking about doing DNSSEC things. And I know people are here, they're probably just curious. How many people that are here are primarily involved in registrar type of functionalities? Registrars. Can you have some hands? A couple back there. Okay. So for people that are doing registrar activities, I'll try to walk away from it. Do you provide a lot of name server functionality for people that purchase names from you? You're doing that? Okay. And so in that case, what the things are that you need to think about doing are making sure your name server infrastructure is capable of supporting DNSSEC, and then making sure that your front end that interfaces between your users and the name server functionality is able to handle the DNSSEC capability. The user interface can be very simple. Do you want DNSSEC or not? And then there has to be the capability to pass DNSSEC records up to the upper level zone that's above you. So that's a simple illustration for registrars. Have any of the registrars here started looking at or thinking about doing DNSSEC? Because I know there are some that have. No, none of the registrars here. Okay, what about registry type of operators, CCTLDs or other registry operators? So in your case where you're doing a registry operation, you have to be able to have your name servers support DNSSEC. You have to be able to accept the kind of DNS information from the zones within your TLD. And have any of you folks involved in registry started looking at any of these yet? Any questions, comments, thoughts anybody has? We'd love to hear, comments, and because that's part of what we want to do. We want to get people to engage and say some about what they're doing, what they need to do. Beat up on us for creating this monster or solving problems of people stealing names along the way. Anything from registry or registrar? Oh, come on. Yeah, okay. Let me get this
So I came in late. I work with Matt, so I want to acknowledge that. One thing that I think that we've seen within the zones that we operate within VeriSign is the additional need for registrars to have continual management and re-signing because those signatures have expiration dates that need to be accounted for.
Okay, thank you.
And back here.
Yeah, I'm Henry Aseli with Telnik. Dynamic information in the DNS. Highly, highly changing information in the DNS. How do we deal with it using DNSSEC, and what are the pitfalls?
Okay, so this is a problem. I know that .com has worried about a lot. Matt, .com is updated. What's the update interval?
Every 15 seconds.
Yeah, you want... Did you hear the question about how we deal with dynamic information and DNSSEC? Did you want to say a couple things about... I mean, I have... But you're the real expert.
Well, I mean, VeriSign made a custom solution for our signing infrastructure because our whole registry system is software that we wrote, as well as our resolution platform. And because of the... tremendous volume of both queries and registrations, you know, we needed to do something specific to handle the needs of .com. And as part of that incremental update process, it's every 15 seconds a new set of changes gets pushed out, and they're signed as changes happen. Literally during the EPP transaction, those things are signed, and then they're pushed out to our servers every 15 seconds.
Okay, so you did it with a custom solution.
Yes.
I know that the people at Bind, ISC, are working towards that, and I honestly am not sure exactly where that stands at the moment, but I know Bind is working towards it. Go ahead, Simon.
At Nominate in the UK, we're running Bind, and we're going to be using Bind with dynamic signing within about the next 4 to 5 weeks. So it's coming really quick. There are just a couple of little challenges left, but .fr are also doing the same thing as well. So a number of key registries are starting to run with dynamic with DNSSEC.
Okay, good. Thank you. And so this it's an area that other people are looking at and are concerned about. There's been good progress made. The most extreme case is .com, but theirs is fully custom, and I believe there's at least one or two other name server software folks that are working in that direction. But Bind, as far as I know, right now is the most closest to having a good solid answer for the fast changing dynamic content. Is that okay? Let's see. So, okay, we've had a little bit from the registry, a little bit from registrars. Now, what about, as there are folks here from users or government activity?
Okay.
From the registry. So, what about the EPP protocols? What the relation is? Is it really necessary to have a deployment of EPP before DNSSEC? We haven't heard about EPP and its relation to DNSSEC.
Okay, there are EPP extensions for DNSSEC. If you are not currently using EPP at all, then you'll need to come up with some mechanism from the registry to the registrars for transferring the information. I mean, you have to have some mechanism today for NS records and just the whole registration activity. So either that could be modified and extended, or if you're planning to go to EPP, then you could migrate to EPP, and then within EPP are the proper options for doing DNSSEC.
I can answer that also from a registry perspective. At UK, specifically for the second level domains like .co.uk and .org.uk, we accept DS records over EPP from our registrars. Well, when we go live, we will accept. We don't do that now. It's actually a very simple extension, a very old extension that exists a very, very long time within the EPP protocol. It's basically the ability to move DS records over EPP. Currently, I don't think we accept any other means of changing any name server records in our Whois database. We only accept EPP, so that's the natural place to put your DNSSEC changes in as well.
Okay, do we have any more comments, questions? Okay.
There are mics right there that you probably can use. Nope. Hey, good.
Hello. My name is Arif Patel. I'm from Botswana, representing a delegation here. So my question is, how much overhead does this add? Because, you know, in Africa, we're still dealing with limited bandwidth, satellites, and, okay, fiber is starting to come in. So how much?
Well, there's a number of different places to look at in terms of overhead. There's load increases that will incur on the bandwidth, because there are more bits that pass around. There have been some studies focused primarily on authoritative name servers. JPRS has done a little bit with authenticating name servers. For the machinery for larger name server operations, the general conclusion was it's less than memory bandwidth processing, somewhere 10 to 15% kind of load increases. And for a large operation that has a normal growth path and a normal replacement cycle for what was considered normal when they were looking, there was a RIPE study that I've forgotten the reference to, but can get it for you, that could be just readily accommodated in your normal growth pattern. We don't have really solid numbers on recursive name servers to what the impact is there yet, where you're actually doing the cryptographic verification. But there definitely will be some. If you're right on the edge today, then you wouldn't even want to do IPv6, because they send more bits down the wire. Okay, but it's that sort of it is an increase. There's enough places where it happens. It's hard to pick one number, but 10 to 15% for various things we've looked at is a reasonable number kind of estimate.
Actually, my concern is it going to be noticeable for people? Like, obviously DNS happens quite quickly because it's UDP, but now you're adding in more overhead. So, as a user, you're saying, okay, am I going to wait another second? Am I going to wait another 2 seconds for the answer?
It depends on where you're looking for that particular question. In terms of large recursive name servers, there's not going to be a significantly noticeable difference as long as all the validation works. Mm-hmm. When the validation fails for whatever reason, then you will see, it'll be more likely that you'll have a failure, because it's not just some name server fell over, it's somebody forgot to resign something. Mm-hmm. Or some other mechanical mechanism. So there are more potentials for failure. If you're looking clear to the end device, my little N900 here, there is a difference. We also have instrumented the Firefox browser, so it's fully DNSSEC capable. And to fire two instantiations of the browser up at the same time, one with DNSSEC, one without DNSSEC, you can see a difference in how quickly they come up and actually present the page in front of you if it's a trusted page. But similarly, we can show you a hijack where we can demonstrate your content gets changed. So, there it's the trade-off of having maybe a little bit more delay, but knowing you get the right information, for which is really the fundamental issue anyway. Are you getting the right content? So yeah, there is a little bit more delay, but we don't have specific numbers clear to the end user.
Okay, thank you.
And if you want to look at the browser, I do have it on my machine, which we can show you, and there's a couple of others in here that have it also. Was there another question?
Yes, sir. Probably a very simple question, or foolish. Let's say I have a customer who really wants to have the auto button security, and I'm giving him a name server gratis now. Can I send him to an outside source, send him to Acme name servers who are run Porsche-grade name servers, and I can sidestep the need for me to do it?
Yes, one of the things that I there's a number of imaginative new services showing up, and let me put a short plug in for our session on Wednesday that runs from about 8:30, it's either 8:30 or 9 start time till 2 o'clock. We have several panels on there, and one of the panels is specifically talking about what's called signing services, which is not quite what you were asking about, but is similar in as much as you can have somebody else actually do all the DNSSEC mechanics for you and hand you back the signed zone. And so in that case, if your name servers were able to properly answer, in other words, modern RFC-compliant name servers, if they are able to properly answer for DNSSEC queries, you could have all of the signing done by another outside service and still serve it on your name servers, and you would not have to change your name servers as long as they were compliant with the RFCs. Or there are other services that I think will show up that are fully DNSSEC that you could outsource the entire thing. So that is a possibility. The fully capable outside DNS signed servers, I can't name who it is, and I don't know if they for sure will, but I think they are going to show up. Okay, I think we've reached the end of our time. I may be going a little past it, but thank you for the questions.
Thanks, Russ. Okay, just thank you for the folk who've sat through the last hour. I really appreciate you coming. I hope it's been really useful. Just to give a quick plug, on the back of the handout here is a whole list of resources. If you are having a think about DNSSEC, you want to understand more, there's some really useful web links on there, so feel free to go and have a look at those. Again, just to reiterate, Russ's plug for the Wednesday DNSSEC workshop. That's up on the fabulous 32nd floor up in Alexandria. So if nothing else, it's got a great view. So if we're really dull, you can at least look at the sea. Please do come and join us. There's going to be folk from Microsoft and Apple and all sorts of people there talking about what they're doing with DNSSEC. So it should be a really, really good morning. So thank you again, and enjoy the rest of your day.